3 offensive touchdowns in Saskatchewan right now. That is tied for the fewest in the Canadian Football League. This was a team that many of us, myself included, viewed as a legitimate heavyweight in the Canadian Football League this season, being a legitimate threat to win this year's Grey Cup. They don't look like that right now. Chess and Balls back at it, and a happy belated Canada Day and a happy 4th of July, everybody, to our American listeners. This is The Waggle, James Cebulski, Davis Sanchez. You lived in America, buddy, so you got to experience what it's all about, 4th of July, Independence Day in America.
I have, and a lot of family too, and a lot of love for our neighbors. Not love for all of them, not going to call out no names, but... Got a lot of love for lots of them.
You can disagree with some, but fair enough. Your dad lives in Atlanta, does he not?
My dad does live in Atlanta, and my brother lives in Atlanta. Yeah, a lot of family.
That's right.
Out there.
Is your dad? I know your brother's a loyal listener to the Waggle, but is dad a loyal listener to the Waggle?
No chance. Zero chance. My dad doesn't even know what a Waggle is.
I was gonna say. I would think. Do you remember the time on Instagram months or like a year and a half ago? We posted a video with Wally Buono, and we said, "Hey, do you listen to the Waggle?" And he said, "I don't." And he was like, "I don't even know what a podcast is."
He did.
I feel like that's your dad when it comes to this, right?
Yeah, he's coming in town this week, so maybe I'll sit him down and make him listen to 80 episodes. Back to back.
There you go. Well, hopefully you don't get too choked up over it like you're doing here right now.
Oh, yeah, I got something stuck here.
Okay, well, you take a minute. Why don't I tee us up and just remind all the good people out there, Mr. Sanchez, while you tighten things up, why don't I remind everybody that the Waggle is brought to you, as always, by Sport Clips. You, too, have an opportunity now in 2018 to look just as fine and as fresh as one Mr. Davis Sanchez by visiting the nearest Sport Clips by chasing Davis's go-to. Do you want me to keep going or you want to take it?
Oh, you're sounding silky right now. Keep it going.
Okay, I'm going to keep it going. The Sport Clips MVP is what you ask for when you walk into these places, okay? It's the Sport Clips MVP haircut experience. You get a massaging shampoo. See, I get choked up even just talking about it. Hot steam towels, that's right. Testify to a hot steam towel. And then lots of sports on TV. There's an intergalactic soccer tournament happening right now. You can check in, go get your flow taken care of, watch the big game, hockey, baseball, basketball, all sorts of sports, people, and legendary haircuts. And did I mention sports? And if you're down with this idea and you just can't get enough of this concept and say, where do I sign up? Well, how about this? If you go to cfl.ca/waggle right now, you can get yourself a free MVP haircut for first-time customers. Just as simple as that. Free, people. F-R-E-E. Sport Clips. Find the nearest Sport Clips nearest you at sportclips.ca. Y'all better know?
I'm going to be out of a job.
You've been carrying me for 2.5 years now, man. You have nothing to worry about.
If I keep letting you read those without me getting involved, I'm going to be out of a job. That was hot fire.
Thank you. I just want free haircuts, buddy. It's kids swimming, it's expensive. Kids soccer, it adds up. You know.
Shout out to the good folks and our partners at Sport Clips.
There we go. Lots to get into this week, and I feel a lot of the stuff we want to get into, it pertains to what's happening right now in the heartland of the Canadian Football League in Regina. Why don't we just get into this, the issue that I think everybody's been talking about for the most part this week, and we might as well offer our thoughts as well. The DCDB experience, Daron Carter, defensive back experience. Chez, I'm just going to say it right now. It is time to put this thing to a merciful end. It's been fun, but it is time to say adieu to you and you, to steal a, to give my mom a little tribute. Not that my mom would ever listen to this podcast, but I'll channel her favorite movie, Sound of Music, going real old school, and probably the most non-football movie in the history of podcasts for football. It is time to end this thing. Stop the insanity, Chris Jones. This team is reeling right now, 3 weeks in. Yes, there's plenty of time to turn things around. Enough is enough. There's just too much of the big play variety that is working against the Riders on this. Put the best playmaker in the league, or at least one of the best playmakers in the league, back on offense and let them try to get things going where they sorely need an offensive jolt right now.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. I give it like this too, C-Ball. If Deron makes two explosive plays on offense in the game with what skill set he has, he could do that every week, and it wouldn't be a surprise. If he does that, makes two explosive plays in a game, most likely they're going to win the football game, okay?
Yeah.
And on the other side, if Deron gives up two big plays, it gets victimized on the defensive side of the football because of his lack of experience and lack of technique, not his lack of talent as a defensive back, because he has a skill set. He could be a decent defensive back, maybe really good. Who knows? But because of his lack of talent and experience, if he gives up two plays a game, which he's averaging and probably will continue to the more film guys get on him, the Riders are probably going to lose that game. You can't give up two explosive plays, one guy, because there's, you know, two other guys give up explosive plays, or one other guy does, and that's a couple too many. So my point is, on offense, he can make two and likely will. On defense, he'll probably give up two. The math to me says he should be playing offense. And so I'm with you on that. I think that Jonesy and the Riders, they have something. And I think they saw something in Deron in practice and in training camp and last season that said, you know what, he's toying around. He probably could play DB. And in an emergency situation, it's obvious that Deron Carter could play corner for you, and that's a testament to Deron. But it's also obvious now that his lack of experience, he's being exploited. And for that reason, I'm with you. You got to get him back off that side of the ball.
It's just – tell me this. Why is there an insistence to continue to have this? Is it stubbornness? Is it to try to prove a point? Is it punishment? Like, I, you know what I wonder? Honestly, and I was thinking about this the other day, I almost wonder, is this punishment? Is this spite because is Deron Carter doing something that Chris Jones is saying, you know what, daggummit, I'm going to straighten this out and I'm going to put him on an island and he can, you know, you want the spotlight, you got the spotlight and you can go create Carter Island, and let's see how you do.
He's not punishing Deron.
This is just a pie in the sky hypothetical that crossed my mind. Going, is this like, is something? What is the method to the madness? Are you that thin at the like? Look, I get he's a phenomenal talent, and you know what? To show what he did, to get a pick six on Bo Levi Mitchell last year, and to do that, that's incredibly impressive. And we celebrated that and loved it. And he did it again against Trevor Harris, who is again a really good quarterback in this league. But, you know, for this in the last two weeks alone, he gives up a 56-yard home run to Deontay Spencer last week. And then this past week, just days ago, he gives up a 79-yard score to Chris Williams, who's clearly found his stride again against the Alouettes in a game that was decided by 6 points. Chezzy, that's the ball game. It's exactly like you said. Two plays like that, if they're working for you, that's a win. If it's two home run plays working against you, chances are you're going to lose the game. Case in point, why are the Riders with a losing record right now? Home run plays that they've been burned by and not enough on the other side of the football. And listen, I'm not saying this is all on Deron Carter, but why not play a guy to his strength? And that is catching passes as a receiver and being an elite one at that in the Canadian football. One catch for 9 yards last week against the Montreal Alouettes. This is not a game the team should have lost to. And the Alouettes went in and won a game, and we will give them a tip of the cap in a moment, but first things first, that's a game the Riders should not have lost.
I agree. Another thing too, James, to add to what you were saying about Duran situation. It's not all on Duran. And when we, the media and the public, was praising Duran for his pick six against Bo and him coming in and playing cornerback, and we were praising him. Trust me, guys, he was not as good at cornerback as we thought he was. And when we've looked at him these last 2 weeks and you see him getting beat and we see the replays and the highlights, he's not as bad as it looks. It's the one against Chris Williams. Like, you're throwing out 79 yards against Chris Williams. That was covered too. That was zone coverage. That was Moncrief, who was supposed to be high in that play. Now, Ron's technique on that cover too, he should have stayed square longer. He should have forced Moncrief to inside release, force Williams inside to an inside release, get him down closer so that Moncrief, the safety, didn't have so far to go and didn't hang him out to dry like he did. But, you know, at the end of the day, Moncrief got to be higher and get more depth to be able to make that play. So it's not all on Duran, although Duran's technique on that play, I think a guy who knows cornerback a little bit more knows that he's got to get him, press him down there, get him down low, move him closer to the safety. And if he doesn't, then he's got to run right with him side by side and not be trailing him, because he knows darn well if he gives him a free release, the safety's not going to get over there in time. So he's not as great as we thought he was when he's making these interceptions. Trust me, I break down the film because that's my area of expertise. And he's not as bad as you think he is. But James, I'm with you 100%. He'll make two big plays on offense, and those two plays at least are good enough to help this team get over the hump. And he'll give up a couple on defense, and those are big enough defensively to sink a team, especially a team that's not all that good right now.
I thought you had a great explanation online on TSN.ca recently, where you had explained how he opened his body, and he almost kind of created like the open door sort of approach, where he basically lets a guy drive by him, as opposed to trying to D up like how you would D up if you were playing pickup basketball, or if you were playing on the basketball court, trying to go mano a mano, that sort of face up to a guy, as opposed to how he's letting guys run by him.
If you don't chest a guy up and make him run around you, and widen his release, is what is the terminology they'll use. If you don't widen a guy's release, you let him just release vertically, it turns into a foot race. And, you know, a foot race against, we said it, and I said that on the SportsCenter hit, and a foot race against guys that Duran's a better athlete than, it's fine, because Duran's going to outrun you or outjump you because he's big, tall, he's a freak athlete. But if he does that stuff against Deontay Spencer, Chris Williams, and now coming up this week, it's Brandon Banks, he's going to get – those guys can go, and he's going to get beat. So I'm with you, bud. And I also, on another note, if he continues to play corner, I think the more and more guys will see, you know, find his weaknesses as time goes on. That's not a knock on Duran either. If anything, I give Duran, you know, credit for what he's doing. He's been actually pretty darn good for a guy that with his limited experience at a position. But, you know, it's still – a really tough situation for him, and I think he's doing the best he can.
Hey, would you ever – tell me this. In all honesty, and this is not just a pile on Duran, but in all honesty, if a DB who was relatively new to a team all of a sudden playing and had two games like that back-to-back, getting beaten big time, would they get cut?
That's a good question. He's given up over the last two games, 3 or 4 balls over 40 yards. Yeah,
if he doesn't have name recognition,
if he doesn't have name recognition or any equity, any making play equity with his team, he'll be cut. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also another thing too, if you're his size, James, 6'5", and you're quick enough to move your feet, like I say, and stay in front of guys, like we say grass basketball, if you're quick enough to do that at 6'5", let me represent you, because I'll be your agent and you'll make $15 million a year in the NFL if you can play corner at 6'5", move your feet and shuffle and stay in front of Deontay Spencer and Chris Williams. It's just not – no one can do it. That's why those 6'5 guys aren't playing corner. So that's the fact of – you know, another thing, you know, looking at personnel-wise, that's partly on the Riders to believe that a guy can do that. Now, there's ways he can still go down there and press and play a little softer and still funnel his guy without fully mirroring him, but you know, you get a guy that's that big and that tall, if he's going to move his feet and stay in front of those little guys, he's going to make $17 million a year.
So in saying all that, if you had one piece of advice to Deron, what would, like, hey man, you are an all-star at this position. You know it's not always easy, and it can be downright hard. And you know what? And it can be downright ruthless too, right? When, you know, all of a sudden you get ISO'd, and if you get beat, it's a lonely spot. What would be your piece of advice?
Yeah, I think
don't screw up
for him. I'm not too nervous. I think for him, I think it would be to, you know the techniques that you know,
yeah,
and work on those techniques. And I think repetition is key. And I think, you know, you can't throw too much at him because he's not gonna all sink in. And I think, you know, if he learns a couple techniques and kind of tries to really, you know, hone in on those techniques and learn those techniques, I think he'll be okay. He has a couple tools in the tool belt. I think you'll be okay. I think it, you know, you have to really understand. And also another thing too, James, this goes to anyone, but especially, actually, here's my answer for Deron. If you know, don't worry as a defensive player in general, but especially DB. I always told guys, and Rod Rust told me this, is a great defensive coach in the NFL and CFL for a long, long time. And Rod explained this to me when I was a rookie. And he said, if you learn the concept of the defense, instead of learning the call, you'll be a lot better off. And what he means by that, and this goes for Deron, is to, if you understand what the defense is trying to do, what the guys around you are doing, what that call is, it helps you understand. And if you, like, example would be the one he got beat on the zone coverage. If he knows that high safety was Moncrief on that play that Williams scored on, if he knows Moncrief is responsible, one single guy responsible for the third of the field, the high, deep third. If he knows that, Deron knows that, he understands that he's got to do something to disrupt that receiver. You know, in from Deron's case, he just knows, hey, I'm a low player. I'm not responsible for the deep ball. He's not understanding the whole concept of the defense. He's just thinking of what his job is. So to the answer, the long answer is to understand the concept of the call before you learn, you know, before you're just trying to, instead of just trying to figure out what to do on that particular call. I think that helps for everybody. That helps.
Well, regardless, and look, there are times, and like I said earlier, touchdowns, you know, interception touchdowns against Bo Levi and Trevor Harris, that's not an easy feat to do against two guys that are considered, one is considered to be maybe the best player in the league, and the other one is considered to be an upper echelon quarterback in this league. So, you know, respect to that, but it's just, you know what, this team is struggling right now. And when I look at the numbers, at what's happening, they, you know, with Zach Caleros going down, and in fairness, he had his own clunker of a game in week number two. They're just not moving the ball right now. They have three offensive touchdowns on the year. Three offensive touchdowns in Saskatchewan right now. That is tied for the fewest in the Canadian Football League. This was a team that many of us, myself included, viewed as a legitimate heavyweight in the Canadian Football League this season, being a legitimate threat to win this year's Grey Cup. They don't look like that right now. They don't look like that. And which kind of brings to another layer on this. Brandon Bridge has his opportunity to shine right now, to be the guy for the foreseeable future in Ryderville. You know, you want to root for this guy. And as we talked about this last week, Davis, he wanted to show that he was not just a Canadian at the position. He wanted to show that he was a quarterback that he could play and that there was faith in this guy. And this is one of the things we talked about. And I raved about, hey, the depth of the position, because you never know. And that depth was put to the test. But Brandon Bridge right now has three interceptions, not a single touchdown on this season. And his completion percentage is barely at 50%. It just isn't clicking right now for Brandon Bridge.
I do think Brandon Bridge got pulled too early this game. I don't think that was, especially when you don't have somebody, you know, behind him who is a guy, you know, that's been around, who's proven. Like, why, you know, I don't understand why you put in David Wofford, a guy who, you know, is you know, hasn't been around. When you want to give, you want to give this guy a shot. I mean, you need this guy needs to be your guy. Brandon Bridge does, well, for the next, you know, at least for the next six games, if Zach Collaros is out, or you know, maybe for longer. And so, it, to me, I bring up the question, you know, how much faith does Chris Jones, or am I not? We always want to say Chris Jones, but what about you know Steve McAdoo, you know, or you know the other offensive coaches, like who? How much faith do they have in Brandon Bridge when they're going to yank him this fast for a guy who, you know, doesn't have near the amount of understanding of the offense that he does? That tells me that somebody over there, whether it's Chris Jones or whether it's Steve McAdoo, someone over there doesn't have a lot of belief in Brandon Bridge. And that to me would be concerning if I was Brandon Bridge.
Well, you know what? I mean, there are teams right now that are looking for depth in across the CFL, and when you look at how trigger happy they have been in Regina over the last couple of years with respect to quarterbacks, you know, whether it was, I mean, you look at the Chris Jones era, you know, 2 years ago it was Darian Durant, goodbye, then it was Kevin Glenn, Brandon Bridge, Zach Collaros, back to Brandon Bridge. They quickly toss in, as it was yesterday, David Watford a few days ago. And now comes the reports out there that they traded for the rights for the explosive. Well, not just Vernon Adams, but also Robinson and out of Michigan.
Yes.
So, you know, a guy who was an explosive threat. And
is it Denard Robinson?
Denard Robinson, yeah. So,
oh, Denard Robinson. I didn't know that. Denard Robinson is freaky.
Yeah, no, he hasn't played in 2 years. He hasn't played in 2 years, and
I'm not talking about on the dance floor, Steve-O.
No, well, I mean, if the dance floor is a football field, he's freaky. I mean, he was spectacular to watch at his time in Michigan, but he hasn't played in 2 years, right? And so, but there are suggestions out there that, or reports suggest that he might be making his way up to the Canadian Football League sooner rather than later. So we'll see if that's a possibility, but. You know, here was a guy who I think people would say in the past or even now, boy, that guy's game would be tailor-made for the CFL. I mean, a guy who was, I think, the first player in NCAA history to have 1,500 yards passing and 1,500 yards rushing, you know, in a season in college football. Like, that's pretty
filthy. Brandon Bridge was 8 for 18 for 111 yards, 44%. That's
two
not
picks
good.
And two interceptions.
Wow. I thought he had one. Okay. That's terrible. And then, but also Watford was terrible as well. And the one big play that he had, you know, to be fair, he underthrew Evans. And Evans he had a terrible throw. Underthrew Evans. Evans came back and made a great catch. So you take away those 50 yards or whatever that was, and his numbers are really pedestrian. So he didn't do much better than Brandon Bridge did. And unexpected, you know, expectedly so, because he hasn't had that many reps. So I don't know what the situation is there or why, but I think Brandon Bridge would have done a whole lot better in that second half than Watford did.
Well, and that's like, why pull the plug on a guy that you feel like you've got, you know, you trusted him to go and get the job done in big games last year.
Yeah.
Right. And now all of a sudden it's week three and you're giving him the hook after two quarters. You're right. And I think in a situation like that, way too soon a hook. I would totally subscribe to that thought. You know, and again, it's a report. And you know, it's not like he's here yet, but Denard Robinson, I mean, this guy was, you know, a former, poster boy, if you will, for the NCAA EA Sports video game going back just 4 years ago. The guy is, you know, he can do a lot in terms of throwing, in terms of running.
Art Robinson's an athlete.
Yeah, he was a fixture on the highlight reels for years in college football, and it obviously didn't translate much into the National Football League, but. You know, here I don't know what direction they're going, but I would agree with you that it was too soon a hook for Brandon Bridge, especially for David Watford, who came in. Yeah, he had a touchdown pass, but he also had two picks. And like I said, Daron Carter, just the one catch last weekend for what, 9 yards at that. You know, that's
But not that much on offense, so.
No, and that's it. I mean, played a few snaps. You know, no, but that's a game. That's a game you should take care of. That's a game you should, in theory, take care of against Montreal. Nevertheless, the Elves get the win. Can I just have before we get into just Montreal here quickly, Chez? Can I just point something out that kind of? And I said this last year, and it bugged me again this year. It was Canada Day over the weekend, on the long weekend. How
and Ottawa didn't have a game.
Not even Ottawa. How about like any game? The National Football League plays on, look at what they do for American Thanksgiving, right? I mean, that is a full slate of football now over the course of the day.
Yeah, watching but Americans that, right? Americans are gluttonous and they just
Yes, and they, you know what? But so are we. You know what? So are we as Canadians. We are gluttonous too. If you serve
me
it,
and you are. Me yeah. and you are at least.
If you serve it, we will eat it. You know what? I sit down, I watch NBA ball on Christmas Day, and there are NFL games to be had. Guess what? I'm watching those too. At some point I will find a television while I'm stuffed with stuffing and gravy and turkey and the few vegetables I find room for on my plate. I watch, and for every holiday, you know, on 4th of July in the U.S., Major League Baseball has a full slate of games, and the NFL has a full slate of games over the course of the holidays during their season, and there is a full slate of games on Christmas Day with the NBA. How do you not recognize that there would be an appetite for a game on Canada Day for, wait for it, the Canadian Football League? Do I make any sense?
Do I make sense here? Yeah, you make sense. But why don't you talk to, you know, some people that have some say? Why are you yelling at me? I don't have anything to do with this.
Now, my understanding is that Ottawa didn't want a game on Canada Day last year because they didn't want to take away from the Canada 150 celebrations. They thought there might be too much going on. That was my understanding to that. But you know what? It's a new year. And
no, they
again,
had a, no, they, you missed it. There was a reason this year is as well that in Ottawa it was the Cebulski family barbecue. They didn't want to take away from the Cebulski family barbecue.
Jim and Kareen's 50th wedding anniversary is coming up later this summer, so it wasn't that
the barbecue
weekend.
Was off.
But it doesn't have to be Ottawa now. Like, I liked it for Ottawa last year because of Canada 150 and because the nation's capital. There's no place that does Canada Day quite like Ottawa. But you know what? Even if it's not Ottawa, are you going to tell me that it wouldn't be a hit to have a game in Regina or Winnipeg or Edmonton or Calgary, wherever, even Montreal, like wherever it may be, to have a game on Canada Day? Hamilton, Vancouver, Canada Day. Holy jumping Jehoshaphat! Get it done. It's simple booking. Wow. It's simple booking. Hey, you know, they have been the whipping boy of the Canadian Football League for the past 2.5 years. I felt good seeing the Owls get the job done. You know what? It wasn't the prettiest. I'll tell you what. Somebody's going to have to teach Mike Sherman how to put a headset on. But did you see that?
Or take it off?
Or take it off? Yeah, whatever it was. I saw way more of Mike Sherman than I needed to. How about that?
Hey, I know this much.
Dad bod. He's got a body like me.
Too sexy. He's too sexy for his headset. Too sexy for his shirt. Too sexy for his mics. That was good. A little midriff. I kind of feel like that nowadays when I gotta pull off my shirt like to try something on. I'm always like trying to pull my undershirt down so no one sees my six pack. But
Coach Sherman, he's tighter. He's tighter than I keep it these days. I'll give him props on that. But you know, it's just like, awkward.
Hey, he won. That would have been bad if they lost the game and he was trying to get his headset off to get the heck out of there.
Like that
first week game or something. That would be bad. The second week too. So that was good. Nice win. Nice win for them. And who cares? Who cares about his headset? That was good stuff though. But that was good. That was nice to see. Nice to see the Owls get that done. And Jeff Matthews looked good. And from all accounts, it looks like Jeff Matthews is going to get the start this week, taking first team reps. The word out of Montreal, I don't know if it's Didier or Herb or someone, one of the OGs in Montreal, messaged out that he was taking first team reps with the Owls this week so far. So Jeff Matthews looked good.
Hey, by the way, do you like the Owls' new helmets?
I do.
Yeah. There's a bit of a simplistic charm to it that I do like, but I don't know if I love them, but there is a simplistic charm that I'm kind of like, not bad. It's not a Bengals helmet, but yeah.
My favorite uniform so far is the Ticats pants with the numbers on the pants. I like that. That's a fresh look. I like that.
Yeah, no, I'm good with that. So, you've got the Alouettes at home to the Red Blacks on Friday night. The Thursday game, Saskatchewan tries to get their ducks in a row at home against the Hamilton Ticats. Hey, guess, surprise, surprise. It's Jeremiah Masoli, player of the week once again, getting it done. And boy, it looked good last week doing it against a pretty good Winnipeg team. Let me ask you this, because there are some people that want to talk about it. So why don't we? But the idea of, based on how well Jeremiah Masoli is playing, do you dare consider trading Johnny Manziel right now, based on the way that he's playing?
Oh gosh, I don't even know. That conversation I would have had a couple weeks ago, I would have had an answer, and now I don't know. Jeremiah is playing so well, I don't know. I don't know what to do with that. I mean, it's Johnny. From everything I've heard, he looks really, really good in practice. So I don't know if you get the value that you would want, because no one else knows that or necessarily, you know, has a way to tell about how he's doing in practice. But supposedly looks really good in practice. Jeremiah's playing at an all-star level. You know, you need two quarterbacks. I don't know. It would depend on a couple things. It would depend on what you see. Is Jeremiah just hot right now, or is he now, you know, reaching that area where he's going to consistently be, you know, one of the top quarterbacks in the league? And he's durable, so you don't have to worry about injuries. If you believe that this is not just a flash in the pan with Jeremiah, and that he's going to be consistently one of the best quarterbacks in this league, then I think it's the conversation.
Like, he's thrown for over 1,000 yards in three games so far. And, yeah, he's got, he's got some picks, but he's gone in. I thought they were right there. And, look, hey, that was ultimately on him, the game against Calgary with the costly pick late in the game. But
it wasn't even that was – everyone keeps saying that. He was trying to make a play. Yeah. They were coming back at the end of the game. He's scrambling, trying to make a play, and he underthrew the ball. It wasn't like he lost the game for them. I mean, he was just in order to win the game and score there to tie the game or take the lead. In order to win, you have to throw the ball. And if you throw a pick, I mean, it's going to happen. I mean, I've heard that said so many times. So I'm just like, that's not on him.
No, but I would say this.
One throw.
No, I would say this. He was the guy who ultimately threw the ball, but I thought he was the better quarterback than Bo Levi Mitchell that day. When you compare their numbers, then the following week, and we thought that this would be impossible to try to do this, he bested Mike Riley on the road in Edmonton the following week. And then the Bombers, yeah, they might be without Matt Nichols right now, but that's still a very good team. And Strebler's looked very good so far to start as a rookie, and he was better than that. Like, the Ticats are 2-1 right now. After the first three games, they have completely proven me wrong. Yes, I get it, still early. I still think it's way too soon to consider the idea of trading Johnny Manziel. Now, if this trend continues in another month from now, I would revisit this conversation and I might have a different answer. But look what we've seen so far over the course of the year. And this is why you need depth at the quarterback position. Chez, since preseason, in a 9-team league, Ricky Ray has gone down and is essentially done for the season. We may not see him on the field again. Matt Nichols has gone down could be gone for up to 6 weeks or so, maybe even more. We have seen Drew Willey go down We've seen Trevor Harris go down in preseason. He was ultimately ready to go when the season started, but he went down. Zach Collaros went down. That's five starting quarterbacks in the first 3 weeks of the season that have suffered some form of injury to start 2018. That's why I don't see it being a sensible decision right now to trade Johnny Manziel. But when you look at the lack of depth across the league, especially with some certain teams, that's where I would say in a month I might have a different answer. One, I think by Labor Day, Johnny Manziel needs to play somehow, some way. I don't think Johnny Manziel is going to sit all season long. So I would think at some point in time he's going to find some action depending on somehow, some way. But he's going to sell tickets too. Like, that's the other thing. Like, tell me Montreal.
I'll just say
Montreal is going to sell tickets.
Are you going to go back to the friends and the jerseys story again?
I got 50 of them. I'm trying to unload on Craigslist right now. Come on, man. It's like I jumped on these too
friends.
Soon, apparently.
They told me that if Johnny comes to the game, if he signs the CFL, they'll buy jerseys. Yeah. They'll come to the game. Where are those guys anyway, Steve? I want to see pictures of you and those guys with their jerseys on the game.
Well, if I get to Hamilton, you know, have you been to Hamilton?
I have.
Yeah. Have you seen anybody? Have you seen Manziel jerseys?
Oh yeah, there was lots. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I told you.
There's your friend. They were your friends.
They were my family members. It's Aunt
no,
Cindy
I mean, I agree.
And,
it would say, Toronto.
And,
it would help. I would say this much. It would help. There's no doubt it would help the Canadian Football League in markets like Toronto. It would help in markets like BC. It would help Montreal. Moving that asset, because Hamilton's going to sell tickets regardless, because that's what Hamilton does.
That's
and Jeremiah's they got a great team. They got great coaches now. They got a great quarterback there, and they're loaded. And they got a great defense. Hamilton's going to be good regardless, mm-hmm. and they're going to be good for a while. They have young players too, so that's not a concern. So moving that asset, if this league was owned by the league, that'd be fine. You move that asset to Toronto and or to Vancouver, somewhere where they might need that, and or Montreal, and you go from there. But the reality is that asset is owned by the Ticats right now, and I don't know what you would possibly give. That those eyeballs on their team, James. You've been talking about it for 6 months. That's the eyeballs that Johnny creates. I don't think you can, you know, a player is not gonna. You know, a couple of good players is not going to equal that those eyeballs. I don't think it's worth it.
No, it's. I mean, we'll see how it. Like I said, I don't think the time is now. Let's see how this plays out for another month. But Jeremiah,
why are we talking about that when Jeremiah is so good right now.
Because that conversation's out there. Like,
yeah, because and you said it because let's just say you said it because Jeremiah is so damn good. Is it time to trade him? That's why you're saying it. To be fair, we're not saying it talking about Johnny. We're saying it's
no,
about
we're saying it in celebration.
Jeremiah's been.
Yeah.
Yeah, real talk.
Because Jeremiah was a bullfrog. Dunna was a good friend of mine.
Dunna dun.
Never understood a single word he said, but Davis helped him drink his wine. Yeah.
Is that what it called? Joy to the world.
That's
it?
Right. That's the one. Look at you.
Bring it back, some classic rock.
This is how you call. This is what we call ragging the puck on a podcast here this particular week. Looking ahead to these matchups here for week number four. You've got Hamilton Sasky on the Thursday night. That song is very catchy, by the way, Chezzy. You've got Ottawa Montreal on the Friday night. Doubleheader on Saturday. Edmonton Toronto. BC Winnipeg. James Franklin's getting the call with the boatmen, and it's going to be I guess the Jedi Master against the young Padawan, if you will. James Franklin's getting the start for the Argos against I guess the guy he held a clipboard behind for a few years in Edmonton with Mike Riley. Opportunity for Franklin not just to step in relief. This is an opportunity for him to be the guy and to show why Edmonton or why Toronto wanted to make a move on this guy. And a guy, let's face it, Chez, you know, long before Johnny Manziel got here and long before Brandon Bridge started strutting his stuff, you know, midway through last season, James Franklin for pretty much the last 2 years was pretty much been labeled the best quarterback in the CFL not starting, right?
Yeah, no, he was. Yeah, you're right.
Until he started.
Until he started.
But now this is an opportunity. So let's see what he can do. I mean, the tools all seem to be there. The numbers would tell you that he's got a lot of upside. He's got lots of weapons to utilize, as the Argos have probably been, neck and neck with the Riders as the most disappointing team to start the 2018 season, considering that the defending Grey Cup champions are 0-2 to start the year.
What about C.J. Gable? We can't get off the Eskimos without talking about C.J. Gable. C.J. looks real good behind that offensive line, behind that offense. Mike Riley is, watching him navigate between ISO routes with Darrell Walker, who looks like there's not a receiver that looks better than Darrell Walker right now, and then navigating between some of the run pass option stuff of Mike Riley's ability to pull the ball if he needs to, tucking it and throwing it, getting ISOs with Darrell Walker, and then C.J. Gable. If you're light in the box and they run in C.J. Gable, he runs with power, he runs with vision. He's tough. And another thing, James, you might
he's been great, by the way. That was a trade that clicked right from the get go late last season when Edmonton made that play for him. And look, it was a quiet first 2 weeks for him. And we talked to Mike Riley on this show a couple weeks ago, and he said, "You just wait. Like, CJ is going to break out," and he certainly did for $165.
He was dogging the Lions. And you know who else looked good over 3 weeks?
Hamilton.
The team. But I mean, from a player standpoint, is Nate Behar. Nate Behar is he's fitting real nice, and he's gonna be strong for them this year. I like what Nate Behar is doing. I like what I've seen from him so far, and Natai Ajayi too. I like what he was doing last weekend. Yeah, he was. That's impressive, and he made a it was a social media post, and they talked about, he went down, caught a touchdown pass, and I always want to butcher his name too, Natai Ajayi. Mm-hmm. But he went down. I didn't realize how good he's a good player. Went down, scored a touchdown, his first receiving touchdown in the CFL, and then he's a teamer too. Went down on the kickoff, following kickoff, and blew up, I think it was Chris Rainey, flipped him over, made the tackle on back-to-back play, scored a touchdown as a receiver, then went down and did that. And the comment was made was, hey, that, the players, I think it was Glenn Suter on TSN, made the comment that, hey, the guys in the locker room might appreciate that tackle on special teams as much or more than they did the touchdown as a receiver. It's just, anyway, guys like that, you can see his teammates, the genuine love and respect they have for what he does. When he scored his offensive touchdown, you can just see how happy his teammates were for him, of that guy who has done some things for them over the past few years. And so it was nice to see. But I've been watching him now at receiver. This kid's a good player.
Yeah, and you know what? I think it was a little bit of a slow start to finally find his way for Behar last year, but Ajayi was certainly on the highlight reel. And you know what? While we're giving love, how about Sean Thomas Erlington last weekend for Hamilton?
No doubt.
Boy,
yep.
I mean, another more Canadian talent, right? And more Canadian talent that we're seeing, and guys putting on a show. I mean, the hurdle.
Yeah,
he was like Perdita Felicien out there, man. He was beastie. Yep. He was flying up there, so impressive.
He looked like OJ in the Hertz Rent-A-Car commercial.
Yeah, like the good OJ, right?
Oh, we're not allowed to talk about OJ on the show.
I don't know. He's out. He's out now. So I mean, he's out.
Served his time.
Okay. That's right, Chez. He's served his time. So he's
they should put his ass back in jail. All right.
We got to get your dad on the show. I feel like he would have lots of opinions. Your dad in Atlanta.
My dad's chill.
Yeah,
chill.
I still feel like he would have some hot takes. I think got some stuff.
Dad's life of the party. He's good. He's the guy that everyone loves. We'll take him out. We'll take him out in Toronto here for dinner. He'll talk to everyone. He's the type of guy who loves everyone. He's always happy-go-lucky. You walk in and talk to the hostess and tell this is my son and this is his wife and. My son had 6 interceptions in 2002, and like he's good stuff. And this, he's a very fun loving. He's good stuff.
He's like you. Yeah. He's like you. Fun loving.
He's like me without the bad temper. Yeah.
Volatile. On that note, don't forget, if you ever miss an episode of The Waggle, you can always find it in our archives department in iTunes. Just click and subscribe, and the latest episodes will always drop right to you, just like this one you're listening to each and every week. Any parting shots, or are we done here, son?
I think we got most of it. Stamps receiving corps looks darn good.
Eric Rodgers looks really good. Yes,
Eric Rodgers looks. Yeah, look, they look nice. Yeah, I think that was the only other thing that I really. It was probably lots of stuff, but that was one of the things that I definitely.
They're proving me wrong, Chez. They're proving me wrong. I was the skeptical guy with Calgary this year, but you know what? Three games in, they've beaten some very good teams. So.
Shout out to Rider Nation. Shout out to our show tomorrow. We'll be in Regina tomorrow. No, tomorrow's Wednesday. We'll be in Regina. No, tomorrow's Thursday.
Thursday.
We'll be in Regina Thursday for CFL game time. Half hour before TSN goes on. We'll be on Facebook. We'll be on Facebook Live, me and Brody Slauson. We'll be doing our pregame show live from Regina. So check us out. Remember, a half an hour before TSN starts their pregame, we'll do our pregame show game time on Facebook, the CFL's Facebook, or on CFL.ca. And we'll be in the tailgate, live and direct from Rider Nation there. It should be fun.
Well, my friend, happy Canada Day. Hope everybody enjoyed the long weekend, and a happy 4th of July to everybody listening south of the border to the Waggle. And thank you so much for everybody that takes the time. And have a great hot dog eating contest if that's where you're rolling. Hopefully the weather's warm enough to go for a swim, have some good beach time, and just celebrate family and good times and all of it. And we'll get back into some football when we kick it with you again next week.
Joy to the world.
All the boys and girls. Joy to the fishes and the deep blue sea.
Holler! Holler!
More joy to Chez and me.
Well, special guest today on the Waggle, one of the most dominant linebackers in the Canadian Football League over the last decade, and from the national standpoint, none much better than this gentleman. Played for the Dallas Cowboys, Indianapolis Colts, and a few teams in the Canadian Football League right now, with my Montreal Alouettes. Enoch Mwamba joins us. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You've been a busy man this year. You kind of moved cities late in the off season there, leaving Sask and headed to Montreal. You had the birth of your daughter. It's been quite the off season for you.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. There's been a lot going on. Absolutely a lot going on, but all great things. And, excited. It's an exciting year, and I'm just hoping it's going to continue on and duplicate the same way during the season.
Tell us about that. I got to find out about that Dallas Cowboys experience, Enoch. That's a dream. I had a chance, as you did as a Canadian kid, to take a shot at the NFL, but never a place like Dallas. That's the real, real NFL experience. What was that like for you to be around that circus and that NFL city?
It was really amazing, man. You get to meet some great men, some great people. I had the opportunity to be coached by Coach Marinelli, who's an historical coach in and of itself. And there's been a lot. There's a lot of things that were going on over there. And obviously, being a part of a team who first got to step into the new Star facility, which is a practice facility for the Dallas Cowboys, it was just amazing. I mean, the amount of money that was spent on that facility was just crazy. I can't remember the number that I was told, but if you walk in there, it's really something to be in, and it was amazing. But fun fact, actually, Davis.
Yeah,
I've been part of. You mentioned a few teams I played for. a few teams in Canada, as well as Cowboys. Cowboys, I was the first to walk. I was part of the team that were playing the first year in the Star. I also was a part of the Budapest Blue Bombers the first year when they played in Investors Group Field, and I was also with the Riders last year when we broke open the Mosaic. So it's been quite interesting.
Wait a minute.
You know what?
Wait a minute. You're talking about Rod Marinelli being historical. That's like code for old, Enoch. And you people might think you're old. Like, look at all this history.
No.
Like, Winnipeg, you're opening stadiums here. Like, people are going to say you're a historian. They're going to have to build a statue of you outside.
No,
the
thing about it, the thing about it was him telling us about the defenses that he used with some legends who played the game, you know, and that's really what I meant by historical, not necessarily. But hey, listen, walking,
Davis is historical.
Him walking, you'll know how what I mean by old. I don't know if you've seen Rod Marinelli walk before, but you know, as soon as he walks in, he takes control of the room and he starts telling you about the Derek Brooks that he coached and the Brian Urlachers and how he started out and invented the Tampa 2 defense and all these things. So trust me, when I say historical, like it's well warranted.
Yeah, no. As a long-suffering Bears fan, I can certainly have a lot of respect for Rod, who used to patrol the sidelines in Chicago as well. So I can appreciate that.
Exactly.
Enoch, how did it end up to Montreal now where you're at? You are someone who's always me and you have. I played with your brother, so we've, me and you have had a relation because of that. But you know, speaking of your contract negotiations, you've always been someone who has been smart with your business. You've always taken your time in signing. You've done it every single time you've been free. I think you've really held out and took your time in making your selection. The same thing you did here with Montreal. You had half the league was after you. Once Saskatchewan released, you're trying to get you. You ultimately signed with the Alouettes. You know, we all know the story of what happened last year in Montreal. And why Montreal, Enoch? You're a very calculated and a smart businessman, a smart man. What was it that drew you to Montreal?
Like you said, as soon as free agency hit, and I realized that I was going to be in free agency. You know, I put my LeBron hat on, but I try to really make it very, calculated decision. Like you mentioned, I think it was the major decision for myself. But again, like you mentioned, I've been on this process before, and I've had the opportunity, which I have to mention that I never take for lightly. I never take for granted because I realize not everyone, especially in the professional, realm, gets to necessarily decide where they want to go in free agency and in pro sports. So I take that very seriously, and I'm grateful for it. But I started to look at my options, and obviously when Montreal became an option as well, I think Kavis did a great job of just being super patient for one, knowing the stage that I was at in my life. Having a new baby, leaving for Saskatchewan, coming back to Toronto and trying to figure the next step out. He was really, really, patient, like I said, gracious, and he was very, very involved. He would, contact me pretty much on a daily, and we'd have a long conversation. And again, Kavis and I go way back since, 2011. He always tells me the story how he wanted to draft me. With Edmonton had the second overall pick, and he always tells me how he wanted to draft me. But Joe Mack, who's his assistant GM now, but was the general manager for Winnipeg that year, did not want to let that pick go. But so we go way back. He's interviewed me, and obviously throughout the years, we still get to see him. And even a little of the short stint that I had in Montreal, we had great. A great time, great conversation, and he was my special teams coordinator. So we go way back, and we have a time, an opportunity to kind of chat for a long time. And he insisted that I come and visit Montreal during this process because he wanted me to see the change that had happened from before, from the last time that I was here to where it's at now and where his vision is. And so doing that and entertaining.
We hear this. What is the change? sorry, Enoch. We do hear that. We've heard about the change, and Aquarius has spoken often about the change and culturally, and we've heard probably the same things that you heard. What is it? What did you see personally? There was a change, you know.
Well, things like, to be honest with you, there's a lot of changes that I saw personally. First and foremost, when I came down, I sat down with Kavis, I sat down with Patrick Levin, who's the president of the team, and, you know, we had great conversations and conversations at length about not only football, the game that I love, the game that we all love, but also from the business standpoint, from, you know, again, talking about the future and where it's going, the direction in which it's going. You know, they were telling me about the marketing plan kind of deal and what they're planning on doing. And obviously, and I think a lot of people at this point now have seen it, you know, the part of it at least, with respect to, you know, the changes that we're making on a monthly basis with our logo. And, you know, they were telling me the game plan as far as what it is that they want to do in order to reestablish, you know, Montreal, to bring it back to the days when David Sanchez used to play here and win Grey Cups on the, you know, and compete for Grey Cups, you know, right, year after year. So that's what the game plan, that's where the vision is headed to work. But from a business standpoint, it's just to kind of give, you know, the team, the Alouettes, an identity, bring back the identity that it is, within the team, and as well as incorporated the team within the city itself as well. So there was a lot that was said, and a lot that hasn't even been, you know, shown yet to the whole city and the whole country yet about where the business is headed towards. But now, from a, you know, football standpoint, you know, there was a lot that was going on. The locker room got redone, as far as the facility is concerned, and a lot of things changed within the facility as far as, you know, a little just treatment wise and where we work out has completely changed, and the plans to where we practice has completely changed. Today actually was the first day we finally got to practice inside the Olympic Stadium, which, you know, is a big
change. No more bus trips. Yes, yes.
Exactly. So it's a huge change. So that was one of the big things as well that, you know, he kind of promised me and showed me about, you know, the changes that were made. I'm trying to think of more. Structure-wise, obviously, you know, everyone knows and sees, hey, look, there's a new head coach. But, you know, you got to realize a new head coach, there's a new defensive coordinator, there's a new offensive coordinator. Like, it's completely different. I had chats with a bunch of guys who were a few of the guys that were still here in the from the old regime, quote unquote. And they were all telling me, man, you know, the locker room has changed so much. You know, it's just a different feel to the locker room now, and it's a lot better now. The guys are a lot closer. It's really a change of culture that is going on right now and within the organization, and it's been just a treat to be a part of it. And I'm trying to play my role to the best of my ability, and you know, do the best I can from a teammate standpoint, from a football player standpoint, and just from a human being standpoint, to try and bring us closer to, you know, the golden days of the Montreal Alouettes, like I mentioned earlier.
You know, do you feel the pressure? Obviously, you come in there, you know, one of the guys on that defense that they the big free agent signings. You know, you just said your relationship with Kavis, and you guys came in, and there's a lot of pressure on Kavis, a lot of pressure on the organization. Do you feel part of that pressure, you know, being one of the guys that is, you know, I guess brought in to help turn this thing around? I'm talking from a football standpoint now.
Yeah, from a football standpoint, man, it's like I've always put more pressure on myself than I've ever heard from, you know, outside, you know. So I think it's always been my mentality. I mean, I was drafted first overall, and I expected more from myself than I think the fans of Winnipeg, the coaching staff of Winnipeg, and all my teammates in Winnipeg ever expected from me. So that's how I always deal with the pressure. And so whenever I get in a situation where, you know, hey, look, I'm in the NFL and I'm a Canadian guy and I have to perform, and, you know, I put more pressure on myself by the expectations that I place on myself. And so I find that every time I do that, you know, I'm able to you know, perform well. And so I try to just, you know, be the best that I can, and again, expect the greatest for myself. And as a result, when I do that, on from all aspects, not just football, but from a leadership standpoint as well on this team. I think it's what's been able to help me, at least up until this point, to move forward and not necessarily think about, you know, quote unquote, the outside noise. And, you know, I think from just understanding that myself and being able to convey that as well to my teammates, I think is what's been helping us to kind of move forward and take, you know, steps forward and steps towards, you know, the team that we want to become.
You know, tell me this, you're kind of one of the, you and your family are kind of one of the great stories of what makes this country great in terms of the whole mantra, especially with the CFL, diversity is strength, right? I mean, share with people that aren't familiar with your journey, how you ultimately get to this point to becoming essentially a rock star Canadian defensive force in the CFL. But it started miles and miles away, not exactly just outside of Toronto or just outside of Montreal or something. Can you take us a little bit through that journey?
100%. You know, I always got to, you know, be grateful whenever I look back from, you know, where I've come from and to where I am right now. It's an absolute blessing, the fact that I'm even able to play football, because, you know, when I was born, I had no idea about the sport of football. I was born in Africa, and at a really, really young age, my family decided to, you know, leave the country because of the turmoil and, you know, migrate to Canada. And, you know, ironically enough, Montreal was the place that my parents decided to come to. And so, you know, I was raised, my first language is French, so it was suiting enough for us to come here and, you know, live there for a few years and then finally moved to Toronto, where it wasn't until grade 10, you know, the 10th grade, that I finally, you know, started to, I stepped foot on the first football field and held a football. You know, and I had no idea about the sport, no understanding of the sport, nuances, any of that. You know,
you didn't play football until grade 10.
Nothing at all. I'm talking about didn't play, but didn't know. I'm talking about didn't know any players, didn't know about the NFL, didn't know anything.
What were you guys doing as kids playing? What sport were you playing as kids?
We played soccer for fun, but basketball was our sport. My brothers and myself, my father was actually a pretty big athlete. He ran track, played volleyball, played basketball, played soccer, and was really good at all of them. And so, I mean, that's where we get our genes from, my brothers and I. But football was definitely not in the picture at all. And so, you know, grade 10, you know, after my first year of high school, we had a really great basketball season. I got to know some of the coaches and you know, they all started to push me towards the game of football. And, you know, I'm a basketball player. If you know anything about basketball players, it's a different mindset as far as physicality is concerned. And so I'm looking at the game, and these guys are putting cleats on. They're running on grass, and they're hitting each other. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this. And so I got encouraged more and more. My brother was also taking that first step as well. So funny enough, I'm sure you're familiar with them, David, from the Kishamas, their family.
Of course. Okay.
The parents spoke to my parents and encouraged my parents as well. And so I get encouragement from their house as well. And, you know, why don't you just try it out? You never know. And so, hey, you know, went on there and got, you know, my coaches put me at running back. They said, hey, here's this football. This guy right here, he's called the quarterback. He's going to turn around, gives you the ball. You see that line over there? Every time you cross it, we do well. Every time you cross it, it's points for us, so we win. And so, you know, that's how I started playing football. And so I would just run, to be honest with you, out of fear. And but you know, hey, my athleticism took over, and I would avoid people, and you know, sometimes run out of bounds. But the more I started to play, the more I started to like the game, and I started to become more and more physical, and I would want the contact. And then shortly after, I started playing defense and offense, and I get to university. I finally get to choose and play full time defense, and that's when I really kind of learned and grew a lot. And, you know, the rest is really history. And, you know, continued to grow ever since.
You
wow,
yeah, that, what a remarkable story. And I mean, two things that jump out for me when you share your journey. One, for all the parents, for all the people out there that talk about in terms of sport specific training, and you got to get your kids training at 10 and 9 years old and make that sport year round. You are a living, breathing example, and not from a generation days gone by. You're what, 29 right now?
29, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, so I mean, you're 29 and showing that, hey, you know what? You didn't pick up a football till grade 10. Like, you've effectively only been playing football for what, maybe about 13 years now, and most of it, most of those
that's
years
right.
have been as a pro football player. So
It's funny. At the pro level, you know, everyone, the majority of the people who I speak to, you know, always talk about Pee Wee football. And a lot of the times when that conversation arises beside my peers, whether I was in the CFL, on a few teams that I was on, or in the NFL, I can't relate. I'm always left outside of that conversation. But you know what? At the end of the day, we all made it to this level. And so that's what really matters, right? But to your point, though, When I do some motivational speaking, and when I speak, I always tell people that it's important to be able to pivot. And by pivoting, I mean to be able to transition from one thing to another. And it's not necessarily only one thing that's going to make you better at, make you the greatest at that one thing. You got to do a lot of different things as well. So I think that playing basketball, playing volleyball, playing, you know, the other running track, those things actually help me to be the player that I am and the player that I was even the first time that I was when I played the game of football. And so actually I would encourage a lot of the parents to allow their kids to try different things, and then afterwards you will see that the benefit is great.
The other thing that also stood out is the fact that, you know, you're such a, I mean, you're a story as you and your family, you immigrate to Canada and, you know, you have this opportunity in this country. But when you look at what's happening in certain parts of the world right now, where you see, you know, immigrants are essentially being turned away or being pulled away from, families are being pulled apart right now. I mean, as somebody who came here and was welcomed and embraced to Canada, and you see what's happening in other parts of the world, what goes through your mind when you see that?
Man, it's absolutely devastating to be able to hear that. And, a lot of times you don't understand, you know, people's situations or people's predicaments until it hits close to home. But like you said, you know, it's something that I've lived. And as much as I have not, I was pretty young and I don't fully remember everything, and it's a little bit blurry, but you have that memory, right? You remember being completely new to a new country. And, I definitely remember my first winter and waiting for this snow that everyone was talking about. I mean, I lived in Africa my whole life. So I remember that. I remember, you know, being in a completely new environment it's definitely different. I remember, and I've been in a different environment multiple times in my life. I remember leaving Montreal and only speaking French and moving to Ontario and moving to Toronto and having to kind of readjust again and being the outsider again and being kind of different. So it's something that's definitely not an easy thing to do, and which is why over my career, you know, whenever, especially after a few years of being professional, I always kind of reached out to guys that joined the team for the first time. And you see this all the time, Davis. I'm sure you remember being like, it's pro football, so there's always new guys coming in. And the sure. first few days, it's always hard. You know, you see people like, what's going on? Where am I going? What do I got to do? Where is this? Where is that? And I always try to make people feel welcome, make people feel comfortable, specifically, you know, when they get into a new environment, because I know it. You know, I've lived it. Not just the country, but also having to learn a new language and then having to kind of just make yourself comfortable in a new environment is not something that's easily done. But I've been absolutely blessed. I've always had great people around me that have helped me. So that's why I've always vowed to, be the blessing to someone else as well.
A class act, Enoch, a great Canadian, my man.
Yeah.
A great a great Canadian football player, and for those that don't know, a great family too. You're everyone I've met. You know, obviously I played with your brother, and I've met your folks, and just good people all the way around. A lot of respect for you, your family, from the family side of it, to Enoch, and what you've become, and what you're still doing, and then from the football side, there's you know, you've been a pretty good darn player in this league for a long time, and a lot of respect for you and what you're doing, buddy.
Thank you so much, man. Davis, you got to meet the wife, man. She makes me look even better.
Love it. Look forward to it. Congrats on the young family, buddy, and thanks for joining us today on the Waggle. Montreal Alouettes linebacker Enoch Mwamba.
Thank you so much, guys.